Blog Talk Radio.
This is the PW Torch livecast for Monday, May 15th, 2017. I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, distributed worldwide since 1987, covering the inner workings and big events and a lot of the smaller happenings in pro wrestling over the years, where we have published over 1,500 weekly editions, and you can gain access to just about all of them, over 1,500 of them, when you go VIP. You can check out details on a VIP membership while listening to today's podcast. Just go to pwtorch.com/govip. If you enjoy what we do here at the livecast, you'll enjoy ad-free, plug-free versions of this show on demand on our VIP feed, along with over a dozen VIP-exclusive updates throughout the week. A dozen other podcasts besides the livecast, a real diverse mix, comes with the VIP membership, along with access online on our ad-free website to nearly 30 years of archives of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter covering all major events. It's always great to hear from new VIP members who let me know how much they're enjoying diving into the wrestling that they started watching and reading how we reported on it in real time in those back issues. And if you're a fan within the last dozen years, you can listen to our podcasts, our VIP podcasts that we started doing back in 2004 before the word podcast was a word. You can go into our archives and listen to what we had to say. They're all available, more than a dozen years of VIP podcasts, retro radio shows going back decades, and over 1,500 back issues. That's pwtorch.com/govip. We'd love to have you as a member. Check it out. All right, we are here, though, on Monday night to talk about Raw, which just ended about 3 minutes ago. And Pat McNeil, Pro Wrestling Torch columnist, joins me for analysis on today's program. Pat, is this you? Maybe not. We have a couple people who could be Pat. This must be Pat, then.
Hello, Wade. Hello, you people.
Hey, Pat, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I'd also like to point out that Wade is busy transcribing some of Bruce Mitchell's earlier columns for Morse code. So you'll want to wait for that.
That's right. Now, Pat, spoiler alert for NBA fans. I know you're a Redskins fan. I know that you were rooting for the Capitals last week. Are you aware of what happened in Game 7 or what's going on in that game at this moment?
Pro basketball, probably not, no.
Okay. All right. Well, then I will just leave it at that in case someone's listening and like DVR the game because they watched Raw first. So, Pat, episode of Raw that dealt with one of the top stories of the past couple weeks, a question mark over Braun Strowman's status. Braun was set up for big matches against Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. He's out. They're saying up to 6 months. My read on that is maybe he'll be out 6 months. Maybe he'll be back in two or three, and they'll tell the story, can you believe he's back in only X months? Nevertheless, written out of current storylines, what'd you think of the substitute scenario, a fatal five-way with five big names from Raw competing at Extreme Rules to earn the shot at a future title shot? They haven't named the pay-per-view because I think they're scared against Brock Lesnar. Well, how do you think they handle that?
I think there's enough intrigue behind putting all of what's there into one match, and having Reigns there means that people will definitely be tuning in to root for him or against him. Balor, he never lost the title, and he definitely deserves to be in that mix. Rollins is, I think it's pretty much the best scenario they could come up with, because just doing Roman Reigns versus, say, Bray Wyatt at Extreme Rules isn't gonna get people excited. They really haven't built up anybody well enough, that they can just go ahead and turn them loose.
Do you have a list in your mind of potential winners and absolutely won't win among those five?
I think that they are positioning Bray Wyatt to do this because they went through a lot of trouble before to set up Bray Wyatt versus Brock Lesnar. I think it was over a year ago, and then Bray Wyatt got hurt and they couldn't do the match. I think Bray is seen as the substitute here for Strowman because, well, he's almost as big as Braun, and we're not going to do Roman versus Lesnar this soon. So let's go ahead and do this since we've been pushing Bray Wyatt, you know, on and off for months now.
Do you think that the way they booked Finn Balor tonight, losing to Roman Reigns, despite the way that the announcers talked about Reigns pretty much having no shot because he's wrestling with one arm? I mean, can you believe he even showed up, Pat? Mm-hmm. It's amazing. He can even walk with one arm. It's amazing. He can see with one arm. They were setting him up for a loss with an excuse, but he won. Does that eliminate Balor from this being his moment against Brock? And is that maybe a good thing to not put Balor in against Brock this soon? Because they're not going to have this is the thing. Lesnar is not going to lose to whomever he faces before he faces Roman Reigns. So whoever gets fed to Brock, excuse me, whoever gets matched up against Brock is being fed to Brock to lose, to make Brock stay strong, to build up to Reigns. So if I'm Balor, I guess I'd rather lose on TV to Reigns and then go from there and not have to face Lesnar in a higher profile match.
Well, you know, Balor had to lose to Reigns tonight in case anybody still had the idea that Finn Balor's a top guy. Yeah, plus it's to even out the loss that that Reigns took for Balor back last summer. I definitely don't think Brock Lesnar is going to lose in July. I mean, the earliest, you know, if they want to do something else with him, the earliest they would do it would be SummerSlam. I can see Balor winning the match because it's a fatal five-way. He'd only have to pin somebody he'd have to pin maybe Seth Rollins to do it, and that's still a possibility. But I don't think it's a good idea.
The way that Bray was portrayed on the show tonight does suggest he's going to win. I mean, he not only was spared a loss, but he was standing at the end having given Sister Abigail to us, unsuspecting Samoa Joe after pretending to be his friend, and then Seth Rollins. I mean, yeah, this, if you're trying to decode the way Vince McMahon operates and the way he books and look for the tells and just look for the logic of the storyline, even though they kind of threw us a curveball by setting us up to think Reigns was going to lose with all the excuses, it turned out just to build him up more as someone who can beat even Finn Balor with one arm. I think it's logical to look at the strong showing by Bray as an attempt by Vince McMahon to make it look like Bray is the strongest guy right now with the most momentum heading into that match.
Yeah, plus they need somebody to headline against Reigns on the house shows, and I just have a feeling that's going to be Bray Wyatt because they've obviously got Seth Rollins and Samoa Joe paired with each other for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, good point. Did you like Samoa Joe charging and attacking Seth at the end of the match to forward their feud? And, of course, that did help them avoid having to actually do a finish between Seth and Bray, which I don't think they're eager to do at this point.
It seemed logical, so yes, I think that makes sense. I don't know exactly where they're going from here unless they want to do... I mean, maybe next week we'll get the Bray Wyatt versus Samoa Joe match everybody's been demanding. I don't know.
Well, I think having...
I still can't believe... Yeah, I'm sorry. I still can't believe what Cole said, that this is the first time Seth Rollins had wrestled Bray Wyatt after the never-ending Shield versus Wyatt family feud and both of them being in NXT at around the same time.
Yeah, you kind of got to put quote marks around that claim. Does it make Samoa Joe look like a schmuck for believing that Bray was on his side? I don't think it did. I thought Bray and Joe did a good job body language wise, looking like they were opponents or that they were foes, having a common enemy in Seth, as the announcers pointed out, and Bray kind of pushing Joe away in a way to go, all right, enough is enough. You know, save it for when it's legal. And Joe going, all right. Boom, and then Bray takes out Joe. I thought they covered Joe well enough that he didn't look like a schmuck for believing that maybe Bray wasn't going to turn on him or not seeing it coming.
Yeah, I mean, or he can, you know, if it does come up, he can pass it off that he was so, you know, he was so enraged by the sight of Seth Rollins that he just paying attention. He didn't feel like, he wasn't paying as close attention to Bray as he should have.
Yeah. I, by the way, want to say, before we get any deeper, I thought it was one of Bray's better promos. I thought that his promo tonight, while it was in the same setting and they filmed it the same, was grounded in reality, not some other world. He talked in a concrete, realistic way about why he doesn't believe Seth Rollins can stand up to and face and defeat Brock Lesnar. What he said could have been said by anyone in terms of trying to get it into the head and under the skin of an opponent. And instead of seeming like some, you know, a psycho playing mind games, well, he seemed like a psycho playing mind games, which is good, rather than seeming like he was a cult leader rehearsing some cheesy community theater play. And I actually thought he was good tonight in that it was, a relatively subtle shift, but it struck me as there's something I like better about that. And it was, oh yeah, he didn't talk about, I'm going to feed you your soul, and you, it was like, it wasn't about that. It was about, you're not good enough to take on Seth. And he used his language that fits his character, but he didn't enter some other world. So I actually hope that that is a sign of things to come. I think Bray's better and more relatable in a pro wrestling way when he's making claims that he can actually fulfill. Because nobody thinks he's ever going to make Randy Orton eat his own soul. But he might think he can make Seth doubt himself by claiming to be the man and an architect and a kingslayer, but is he enough to slay the beast? That I think people go, ooh, now I heard what he said. I'm not just numb to the trite cliches that he's spewing.
Yeah, I didn't care for what Bray did in the opening segment, but the third hour promo he did, yeah, I thought that was focused. It made sense, and you actually believe that Bray Wyatt wants a piece of Brock Lesnar.
What didn't you like about the beginning of the show? Because I just don't think anything stood out to me either way since he was interrupted pretty quick. Was there something that you remember not liking?
I wasn't crazy about the everybody has a microphone. Let's all gather together in the ring and do our impression of the Five on Fox News Channel. Fortunately, Seth Rollins actually saved the segment by coming in and saying, "Hey, I want to beat up Samoa Joe. Let's go, pow!" That I appreciated.
And he said, "We didn't come to New Jersey to talk, or the fans didn't come here to hear us talk. They came here to see us fight, or whatever." You know, I mean, it was like, yeah, that's what babyface should say. Let's fight. Yeah. Let's not talk. I think it does pull the rug out from under babyface momentum when or fans relating to them when the babyface comes out in a long segment, because they did a 3-minute video, 3.5-minute video to start the show between Bray and Roman. Then this segment went 15 minutes of just one person after another coming out. Mm-hmm. I thought it, in a way, was sort of it had served a purpose. It's everybody got to make their case, but having Seth come out last and not drone on when fans were ready for action, it's a desirable place if you're a babyface to be. If Seth came out as a fifth guy and talked for 3 more minutes, I think fans start resenting Seth, whether they are consciously thinking that or not. They're getting antsy. So in that sense, at least, yeah, Seth cut Bray off and they got to the action. All right, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, I solicited emails on Twitter and on my report on pwtorch.com throughout the show. We'll introduce some topics that people sent in by email regarding the show. We'll also take some calls, and you can get in line on the phone banks, 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. And our email address, if you're listening live and don't want to sit on hold or you're shy on the phone, just email us, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. We've got coverage over at our sister site of USC 211, a very newsworthy event. Were new stars created on this loaded lineup? 4 in particular might have become bigger stars because of what happened at USC 211. We've got an editorial up. The Media and Business column is up right now, posted just before Raw went live. And you can check it out at our sister site, MMATorch.com. And you can catch up on all the happenings and all the results at USC 211 on our website, MMATorch.com. Here's more details. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, we're back. I'm Wade Keller, editor of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, PWTorch.com, MMATorch.com, and also encouraging you to check out our sister site, PWPodcasts.com, chronicling the world of wrestling personality-hosted podcasts and newsworthy quotes uttered by wrestlers and other people in the business on podcast interviews. Go check it out, PWPodcasts.com. It'll help you decide what podcast to listen to next, or just catch up on what you're missing on a podcast you might have not have time to listen to. I thought Craig Elby did a great job with the detailed write-up of the latest Eric Bischoff podcast, talking about the reaction to Sinclair Media expanding by buying WGN's properties and what it means for Ring of Honor and what Ring of Honor has to do. And Eric's been in WCW when he had the resources to really take off and compete with WWE. He was in TNA, where there was less of a budget and a much less effective execution of an attempt to compete with WWE. He lent some of that insight to the ROH situation. We got a rundown of that on our written podcast recap. I'm joined by Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Pat McNeil, who's been on staff for over 15 years. And we're talking Raw. We focused on the major storyline in the first segment regarding a setup for replacing Braun Strowman against Brock Lesnar in Lesnar's Great Balls of Fire title defense. And now we're going to move on to some phone calls and some emails. Our first email is up, and this comes from John M. from Ripon, California, VIP member. He says, "Hey, Wade and Pat, I have a couple thoughts on Raw. I want to get your thoughts on these. I hate seeing them give away matches like Roman Reigns against Finn Balor on Raw, but I understand that's a climate nowadays. It was a really good match, though. Finn Balor is phenomenal at selling. Tonight, it was the best I've seen in WWE in a long time. Does it... Well, let's actually talk about those two, and then I'll move on to his other questions. Pat, do you have any issue? I mean, we understand the climate. 3 hours of Raw, 3 hours, 10 minutes of Raw to fill. They got to hold up, try to keep the ratings up. And SmackDown, 2 hours. They got a lot of TV time to fill. And in the network model, they're not asking people to pay $55 anymore to watch marquee matches. You just pay $10 and you get a lot for your money, including the Balor... WWE 24 special that's airing opposite of us right now. Do you have a problem with Balor versus Reigns, or is it just kind of a necessary evil in a sense that they have to give a marquee match like that away with no hype and no advance notice, giving them a little latitude also for the fact that they're compensating for a major star getting injured?"
Yeah, the other issue here, Wade, is they're coming off a really rotten rating last week, and ratings weren't that good the week before that either. So I can understand why they'd want to try and load up the card as much as they could to try and pick things up. Because despite what they're saying in their news conferences and such, they need the ratings to stay somewhat stable because they've got another contract coming up in a couple of years. I actually thought that match was important to have a good match, and they had a really good match. But I think it was important to have, you know, Finn Balor out there, you know, putting on a strong performance and reminding people why they got excited about Finn Balor in the first place last year. I mean, I know he lost to Roman Reigns, but I don't know who was actually expecting Balor to win. And just having him look that good out there, I think might actually be it probably helped him.
Balor made Roman Reigns look great. Bring It to the Table show from earlier this month, JBL, Corey Graves talk with Peter Rosenberg talking about how, you know, no reason to boo Roman Reigns. If you, like Peter Rosenberg said, you're only booing him because you're jealous. You're a fat slob like me sitting on your couch and you're booing Reigns because your wife perks up when you see Roman Reigns. And I'm like, no, that's not why people boo Roman Reigns, but that's why WWE brass thinks fans boo Roman Reigns, so they want to think that. Not quite sure that's the best approach to get fans to cheer Roman is, well, he's not a fat slob like you, so cheer him. I thought that was a weird approach. But Corey Graves and especially JBL said, Roman has great matches, and he's the future of this company. And if you boo him, you're booing him. You shouldn't boo him because he has bad matches, because he doesn't. Now, the counter argument to that, Pat, fair or unfair, is Roman Reigns has good matches because WWE is feeding him great athletes who are world-class ring technicians, ring generals, who are going out there and doing what CM Punk complained that he was told over and over again in his final weeks in the company, which is be sure to make Roman look good. And they, Roman has had the full machinery behind him. And when you look at Roman's opponents, it is one of the most impressive lists of modern-day talent whose job primarily is what Punk said, make Roman look good. Did Balor do a really good job of that tonight? I think he did. Does Balor gain something in the process? Well, from a political standpoint, Pat, he gains a lot. If you make Roman look good, you get paid back later. So if I'm a Finn Balor fan, I might be mad that he lost to Roman when Roman only had one arm and they made it seem like this incredible uphill battle. But if you understand the way WWE operates, Balor having a good match and making Roman look good, it means he's winning over Vince McMahon. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think this was a great night for Finn Balor in that respect. They're definitely seeing that Finn Balor's back in mid-season form, and they can use him anytime they need to make someone look good. He can perform in big matches. Yeah, I think this is great for Finn. I think it's a little unfair, though, to Roman Reigns to say, well, you know, he only has good matches against with wrestlers who are better than he is. Because, I mean, you know, Braun Strowman's not a ring general, and he and Roman have had some pretty good matches. I don't think Roman Reigns is the second coming of Ric Flair or that he's Daniel Bryan or Zack Sabre Jr. I think he's a good to very good wrestler with a very marketable look.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can claim that Roman isn't a good wrestler now. That said, he has been given, and I've defended Roman in this sense, and actually in a lot of senses. I just think he's miscast as babyface. But I defend him in the sense that not everybody could have the high-quality matches Roman has had against the world-class lineup of opponents he's been given. And so there is some truth. There's a lot of truth to what JBL says in that all Roman does is have good matches. My point is, other than Strowman, and by the way, Strowman's a big surprise and a really good big man wrestler, and they had really good big man chemistry. But nevertheless, Roman has rarely, if ever, certainly not often, been the better opponent who made his opponent look good. His opponents for years have been lined up to make him look good. But hey, not everybody has the presence and the ability to have a match like that. If Lex Luger could have, if Sid could have. I mean, you can list guys who were given opportunities by Vince McMahon and didn't deliver like Roman has. He's a really good athlete, and granted, he's, you know, he overdoes the Superman punch and kind of the video game array of moves he does. It's too limited and sometimes comically so. But even so, he's showing more range and getting better, and you need to see somebody who JBL is declaring the future of this company. You need to see him get better, and I think he has. Mostly, I just say to Finn Balor fans, yes, you can be upset on principle, but from a pure reality standpoint, the way WWE operates, this was a good night for Finn. John M. Has another topic. Does it say more about the fans of today or the product when you get Goldust turning on R-Truth and the people love it, much like Dolph turning a couple months ago? Is it reactions like this that will keep Vince from ever turning Reigns? I'm guessing in his mind, if he turns Reigns, the fans will just cheer anyway. Pat, where are you on that? It all comes back to Reigns, but I mean, we are talking about Raw tonight, and he was a big part of it. We can talk about Goldust or Truth, but if Roman Reigns turned heel, would fans cheer him because he turned heel? I don't think so. I think they just genuinely don't like Roman, and it's not because their wives like him. It's because there's a vibe about him that they don't like, and I think they would embrace booing him if they matched him against the right babyface opponent. I think the reaction to Goldust and Truth tonight had more to do with fans having more of an affection for Goldust than R-Truth. I do not think if R-Truth turned heel on Goldust, the fans would be chanting, "Thank you, R-Truth." I think they would have booed Truth. This is a case of Goldust. I'm happy they're pushing him, Pat, but I'm not sure that he's the right guy to be a heel. We'll see. I think fans have an affection and respect for Goldust that can't, that a heel turn can't overcome. With Reigns, I don't think that's there.
I think they're going to push Goldust all the way to the kickoff show of Extreme Rules when he takes on R-Truth. I mean, that's... I don't think this is... I think the fans were mostly happy that... Oh, good. They're finally doing something with Goldust and, by extension, doing something with R-Truth. And maybe, you know, maybe this will be more interesting than just sending him out there to lose every week.
I hope Goldust gets another shot. I saw Jason Powell over at ProWrestling.net, who will be my guest co-host on Wednesday, by the way, on the Midweek Flagship. He wrote that, you know, and I felt the same thing. I'd written the same thing. I'm glad Goldust is getting another shot to get a push. I think he's gotten himself in shape. He's gotten himself cleaned up. And I think it's great that he's getting a chance to do something of more significance. We'll see how long that lasts, though. You know, is this just to have, you know, to add a little depth to the heel chart on Raw? Ultimately, he's fed to top-tier guys. Or does he get to rise up and maybe have a run at like a feud with Dean Ambrose at some point where he's treated as being in Dean's league? Or does he eventually even have an IC title run? I wouldn't rule it out, but I think it's more likely this just gives him a little extra juice, but not a significant upturn in his place on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be bad for... I don't know what Goldust's long-term future is. It's not going to be bad for him to have one more, you know, to have one more run as even a mid-card heel would be. Would be a much better way to go out than going out the way he's been. You know, he's been treated the past year.
I was. Let's take one more topic here from John. He says, "I was bothered in the opening segment when Bray appeared in the ring and cut a promo, and Finn Balor just stood there, seemingly not even bothered by the fact that Bray cost him a shot at the IC title just a couple weeks ago. Was this Vince with his nobody remembers that anyways approach?" Pat?
Yeah, that's entirely... Yeah, that is what it sounds like. And I think that's part of the... I think that's also part of the problem with Roman Reigns. We talked about it before, you know. I mean, Roman might actually have a chance with his own personality, even as, you know, even if it's a little bit, even if it rubs people the wrong way. You've got a 71-year-old man, trying to make somebody popular with fans that are half, you know, the target audience, which is, you know, half his age or less, you'd think.
Well, yeah, I hope we get a better acknowledgement of history going forward. And I'm kind of two minds on this, because I understand Vince McMahon, let's lean forward, let's talk about what's going on today, not yesterday. And I think Kevin Dunn encourages that approach. But there's something to be said for rewarding fans for remembering. And if you make what happened a couple weeks ago and a couple months ago and a couple years ago seem important, they're more fans are conditioned to then be more likely to care and invest in what's happening this week, because they now believe that will matter 2 weeks, 2 months, and 2 years from now. And acknowledging Finn Balor against Roman Reigns, the first match, is good. But I think they pick and choose their spots. I mean, I guess I would tell John, you know, they're not going to constantly acknowledge everything, because there is so much going on with the storylines and the wrestlers. They don't always want to remind people, hey, these two have a feud that wasn't settled, or this guy has an issue, if that's not what they're trying to sell viewers on right now. And so I think we have to settle for them strategically picking their spots and hope they do it more often, but understanding there are just going to be times where it doesn't benefit them to do that. All right, we'll go to our second break here, and when we come back, we'll start taking phone calls and also more emails. If you've got a question, send it to pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. That's pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch Livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. That's It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in PWTORCH.com/Amazon. That's PWTORCH.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you. All right, we are back. By the way, you can get in line on the phone banks at 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. We'll also talk about what happened before Raw went off, before Raw went on the air, in a couple moments too, for those who are curious about that. But first and foremost, let's go to our first caller of the day. And make it a mystery caller, area code 908. You are up first. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade. This is Adele calling from Jersey. I attended the show today.
I went to you first because I thought the area code might indicate you were someone who went to the show. So I'm glad you called in. What happened that we didn't see? Talk to us about it. I don't need to read the email if you update us.
First off, this is probably one of the best Raws that I've been to in a while, it was actually a great show. I think Braun Strowman being injured actually benefited us, and in a weird way, where some of these matches were set up, especially Finn and Roman, which we would probably have not seen this early.
Yep.
As far as the crowd was concerned, I think Enzo got the biggest pop of the night besides the Roman boos. It's kind of sad that Enzo didn't get to talk a lot on the mic either. But Titus kind of made up for that. That was actually, the crowd reacted really well to Titus. Alexa Bliss got a really nice pop. She has amazing mic skills. I think we all know that. And Bailey wasn't that good today. I'm not sure what happened. She did not look anything like she usually does. Other than that, I mean, the matches were great. As far as the craziness between the Austin Aries match, yeah, that got a little crazy with beach balls. The person got kicked out. There was a lot of weird chants going on at that time. I could send you some videos on that as well. It got crazy during the Austin Aries match.
Oh, man.
Now, what do you guys want to know?
Let me ask you this. How much did the purple ropes lead to fans either getting up or getting restless? Like, do you think that's still – we hear that a lot from people attending TVs at Raw. When the purple comes out, people just kind of tune out.
Yeah, it actually – the problem with the Cruiserweight is the time it takes to change it. People get up. People – you get that excitement, and then it's 5 minutes of torture of waiting for them to change – everything back around. And I think it got worse with no one interested in the tag team match and then waiting for the ring to change again. There were some, I think that was the only down point, but it is between the commercials and being 3 hours, it takes a long time.
Speaking of waiting a long time, was it Finn Balor who had to stand in the ring for like 18 minutes after his ring entrance before Reigns came out?
Yeah, he did, but he was actually pretty cool. He actually was talking to fans and stuff during the commercial break, so he went around the ring and he was talking to people, so he was actually pretty cool about it. When Alexa Bliss was part of her commercial break, she just stood there just staring at the crowd. But Finn Balor was pretty cool. He was talking to a crowd. He was doing his NWO sign and stuff like that.
Anything after Raw went off the air of note?
Samoa Joe attacked Seth again, and then Seth did his finisher, and he thanked the crowd for coming out, and he talked about his journey coming back.
And did Roman Reigns get a different... Have you been in Newark for previous, like, for Extreme Rules? Have you been in that building or in that market for other Roman Reigns reactions?
I was there. I've been to Newark a bunch of times, mostly every time they come here. I go to Prudential Center. I mean, Roman got booed. He got booed really, really loud. Pretty much more than about 80% of the place was booing him. But the kids, and there were some women cheering for him, but other than that, everyone else was booing him.
Did it seem like they were hostile towards him and rejecting him or booing him because, well, you've earned our respect, but it's the thing to do?
I think everyone just doesn't like him. I think everyone's waiting for him to turn heel, and I honestly think if he turns heel, everyone's going to start cheering for him. I think at this point, we're going to boo him regardless of what he does in the ring, and it is what it is.
Do you think if he turns heel, they'll cheer him if they match him against popular babyfaces? Like, will they just be so happy that he's a heel that they'll suddenly like him enough to cheer him against other babyfaces? Like against Finn Balor, for instance?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I was thinking AJ Styles, but I think everyone would cheer AJ Styles more than Roman Reigns any day of the week.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know how it would change.
That's my counter-argument to people who say that Reigns will just get cheered if you turn him heel, so why bother, or, you know, whatever. I'm like, if you're doing your job and you cast the babyfaces correctly and you're pushing the people that fans actually like, they really don't like Roman Reigns. Like, that doesn't change when he's basically going to be the same guy if he turns heel, except he'll be able to cut promos expressing how he really feels about fans, I think, and about his place in the world and how awesome he is. And I just don't see fans cheering that. Like, I don't know. I just think that's my answer to, like, you know, Goldust getting cheered in our email at the top of the show. Goldust gets cheered for turning because they like Goldust more than R-Truth. If R-Truth turns, I think they boo because they like Goldust more. It sounds so profound, but if you actually book heels against babyfaces where the fans like the babyface more than the heel, you'll actually get the crowd response you want, which happens a lot, actually. But prominently, there are, you know, quite a few exceptions, too. Pat, do you have anything you want to ask of our caller from New Jersey, Adele?
Okay. When they taped main event, how did the Nia Jax-Dana Brooke match go?
Oh, man, Nia Jax almost killed Dana Brooke a couple times. Oh. I think she dropped her on her head once and almost broke her neck the second time with a body slam. Mm. It was, yeah, I honestly don't know why she hasn't been brought back down to NXT or whatever, but when you watch it, you'll see.
I can guess.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Okay. I don't like to hear that. I mean, she's gotta stop almost killing people. I mean, it's because if she gets injured now, if she injures somebody now, WWE is looking for a lawsuit because they should know, based on your observation tonight and what we've seen on TV before. It seems like she's kind of dangerous, and maybe she's, with her size, she shouldn't be doing some of the moves she's doing, and maybe she should get more training. I mean, that scares me when I hear that.
Yeah.
I got nervous.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, definitely check it out. You'll see the craziness. You'll see there's two body slams, and one of them, she landed pretty bad. Mm.
And I felt that way watching Jeff Hardy do the Swanton now. You know, and I feel that way when guys are in their prime and they tuck their neck at the last second. And Jeff's a gifted athlete. And he's done it, you know, thousands of times, literally. But I get nervous about a guy who's beat up and might not have all his timing and might not know that he can't quite wait to the last second to tuck, and he's going to land on the side of his head. And, I mean, I hope that's just me being, you know, I've talked to wrestlers about this, and they're like, Wade, relax. We know what we're doing. And I get that. But, when he tucked at that last second, it seemed late. And then his selling for the beating he took was convincing, too. Anyway, we have an email question on that topic. But, I get nervous watching wrestlers who are either beat up and their timing might be off, or they're just green and they have the kind of size and power relative to opponents like Nia Jax does. Anything else for us, Adele?
No, that's about it.
Cool.
Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, thank you for calling. Always great to hear from people who are on site at the building. We will, let's see, where are we on time? Yeah, we got time. Let's go to another call here. And up next, we will go to area code 201, another mystery caller. 201, please state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hey, this is Brian from New Jersey.
Oh, great. Hey, Brian. Were you at the show tonight?
What's up? Yes, we were at the show.
Good, good. Yep, I took your call again, even though I didn't recognize the number, because curious if you were at the show. So do you have anything you want to add to what Adele said in the previous call?
What I noticed during the Cruiserweight match, they had the Beach Balls going.
Yep.
And they had, like, three Beach Balls going. They kicked this guy out who popped the ball. And they started chanting all this stuff. I don't know if you guys can hear that on TV.
Pat, did you pick up on that?
I could hear them chanting something, but I couldn't make out what it was. So
yeah.
Yeah, they were chanting, they were calling him an a-hole. They kicked the guy out who brought the beach balls in. They were really going hard at this guy. And then, that's what I noticed during the Cruiserweight match. It didn't really, the tape going on with the purple ropes didn't really matter. What happened was this beach ball thing was going on. I don't know if you guys really saw that.
Okay. I didn't notice. Sometimes stuff like that I'm going to miss if I'm typing up my report on the show at the same time. But, I mean, it's just the Cruiserweights have challenges, and the purple rope thing doesn't help, but man, it's too bad, because the style wise if they had one or two stars who had that combination of star power, I'm still not star power and athleticism that rises above the current middleweights, we'll call them, the AJ Styles, Kevin Owens, even Seth Rollins, who are doing a bunch of cruiserweight spots in larger bodies, even though AJ was essentially a cruiserweight most of his career. Same with Finn Balor. It's hard to stand out when, Pat, essentially the best cruiserweights are competing in the heavyweight division. AJ Styles and Finn Balor, of course. So I don't know what the solution is. I still say stay the course, but tweak some things. And the purple ropes are not helping. Pat, do you have any thoughts on that? Or Brian, you can jump in too, I guess.
Well, that doesn't help.
Sorry, I shouldn't throw it
to people. Nor does it help when they...
Go ahead, Pat, first. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I never should throw it to two people. That leads to that. Go ahead.
Okay. They shouldn't have the special Raw Cruiserweights graphic describing the Cruiserweight match. You just have the regular Raw graphic. They need to... I mean, the same, keep the same ropes. So act like it's an actual Raw match, I think, would help.
And
they also need... Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Pat. I thought you were done.
I'm done.
Oh, okay. All right, go ahead, Brian. Your thoughts, sorry.
I think my friend Johnny also wants to chime in right now.
Okay, cool.
Well, with the Cruiserweights, I just don't see why Austin Aries isn't what your focal point of your division is. I mean, the guy is the most charismatic. He could be a heavyweight. He was a heavyweight in TNA. The guy is incredible. Why is he not the focal point? I don't understand.
Pat, your thoughts?
He's not the focal point because they're doing a deal with him chasing Neville for the title, and I suspect that when Aries eventually does get the title, he'll be the focal point for a while. But, the whole thing is not that important to Vince McMahon. You just get that impression from watching. You get that impression as 205 Live keeps going on, that it's just not a priority right now.
Yeah, it's there to fill time. I think they aspire for it to be an attraction on the network. But, I've heard multiple times Vince is not thrilled with the performance of the division, but I don't think he wants to pull the plug this soon. Pat, could Adam Cole make a difference if he ended up signing with WWE? Now, he gave a farewell speech over the weekend on the ROH show, and now
last night,
at the tapings, and then now is booked for some indie shows in June. So he's not moving immediately over to WWE developmental. If Cole does end up in WWE, could he be a centerpiece attraction in the cruiserweight division, or would you vote for him to end up being a Finn Balor, a smaller guy wrestling with the heavyweights?
I think that's from what I've heard, he's already been earmarked for NXT as opposed to him being put in with 205, because again, if you put him on 205, he's that's a show that Vince controls, and it's not a priority of Vince's. Whereas I think between Triple H and all the former ROH guys who are now working for NXT, I think Cole will be treated as a big deal there.
Yeah, and I'm not against Cole going to NXT first. Seeing Cole work with a number of guys in NXT, I think that will make for really good TV, and I think Triple H is going to want Adam Cole. That said, once he gets the main roster, I do wonder with his size if he's going to be looked at as a guy who can be an anchor of the cruiserweight division. Austin Aries might end up being, to answer Johnny's question, I think that he could end up being a focal point of the cruiserweight division, but they invested in Neville, and you're right, Pat, they want Aries to chase, and if Aries is injured, that's going to slow down, slow down what they do and are able to do with them. I did get new report from Northeast Wrestling earlier. They've booked Adam Cole against Cody Rhodes on their May 26th.
For the 26th, yeah.
Yeah, May 26th in Newburgh, New York. You can get details on that at northeastwrestling.com. However, I was told they were not allowed to announce the match until yesterday. So ROH and Adam Cole didn't want indie promoters to announce that he wouldn't be in ROH afterwards, and Cole playing coy. And I like that he did that about his future when he did interviews leading up to the pay-per-view. So they are rushing hype now in the last 12 days to sell tickets to their Spring Slam event. But again, NortheastWrestling.com featuring Adam Cole's first non-Ring of Honor match against Cody Rhodes. So there you have it. I'll go back to Brian and Johnny just for any closing words, if they have any, and then we'll cut to a break. Guys, I appreciate you calling. Anything you want to close with?
Nothing. Do you guys want to ask us?
No, I think I covered my questions from the live experience, and I think you guys did a good job filling us in on your thoughts.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Drive safe, and thanks for calling. Always good to hear from people when you attend shows. If you're attending SmackDown tomorrow, give us a call and let us know ahead of time that you are calling by email, and I can prioritize taking your call so you're not having to drive and hang on the phone if you're leaving the arena. And Greg Parks will be joining me tomorrow, PW Torch columnist. You can read his columns on page 10 every week in the Prosing Torch newsletter. He will be joining me tomorrow as co-host of SmackDown. And then, as I noted, Wednesday, Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net will join me for the midweek flagship at 1 Eastern, 10 Pacific on Wednesday. So join us live then if you can, or listen on demand afterwards, as most of you do. And last week, if you missed it, my guest on Interview Thursday was Sean Waltman. He was on for about an hour, 15 minutes, and he gave his thoughts on Shinsuke Nakamura. We debated Roman Reigns a little bit, and a number of other compelling topics. Sean is always a phenomenal interview. Interviewed few people more than him, if anyone, and it's always fun having, as he says, a conversation with me, not an interview. We've known each other for so long, our shows are conversations, not interviews. So check that out if you missed it. That was last Thursday's Interview Thursday. It's on our podcast feed here, or you can also find our shows on demand at pwtorchlivecast.com. Speaking of which, we will go to a break with some word on that, and when we come back, more of your calls and emails. When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com. All right, we're back live. You can follow me on Twitter, by the way, at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand at PW Torch. Follow our sister brand at MMA Torch. And follow our newest brand at PW Podcasts. You can follow along my comments on wrestling and reactions to people on Twitter, and also get updates on the latest posts from PW Torch, MMA Torch, and PWPodcasts.com. We got another email from John P. from Richmond, Virginia. He said, in at least three matches so far tonight, he sent this in during Raw, they had the heels take over the match during the commercial break. Can you think of any reason why they would employ this formula? Pat, any theory?
Yeah, the heel can clamp down on the match until they come back from break. Heel in control means they can slow down the match and maybe catch their breath a bit.
Yeah, I don't think they want the babyface. I mean, it's worked both ways. But, yeah, I mean, the babyface getting at a bunch of high spots off camera, that burns out the crowd and slows down or reduces the pop that the babyface will get when he makes his comeback. That's a strategy. They want, when the babyface is on offense, they want the crowd fresh. And so they're building up to that moment during the commercial breaks. But they want to go to break on an up note. Oh, you know, Seth Rollins is in control. Tune in afterwards. And then when he comes back, it's like, oh, no, he lost control. Now they got the TV audience invested in his comeback. But it's a fair question. It's a good question. Chris from Plainfield, Illinois, says, I really believe WWE is slowly turning Roman Reigns heel. His promo with Kurt Angle was pure heel to me. Also, Finn is a definite babyface. Roman is the obvious heel in this matchup. Pat, is there any chance Chris is right and they're framing Roman as a heel? And that's what they're building to, with him bragging about beating Undertaker and his attitude and demeanor and then being booked against Finn Balor. If you were just tuned out of wrestling for 5 years and tuned back in and watched this show, I mean, you would think Roman was a heel based on how he carries himself, how the crowd reacts, how he talked to Kurt Angle, a sympathetic figure as a GM and a legend. Your take on that?
I would love to believe that, Wade. I would be very happy if that were the case. I just don't. They don't. You know, they haven't done a long, subtle heel turn like this for some time, and I don't think this is the case.
Yeah, no, I don't either. I mean, I'm with you. It'd be nice, but I just don't. I think they're setting up Roman as Roman's going to be Roman. He's the big dog. It's his yard. He's going to be himself. Love him or hate him, he's a star and he's a badass. He's the big dog, and they're not going to have him pander. They're not going to have him act like he's bothered by getting booed, but they're not going to turn him either, at least until they get through the Lesnar match, and then we'll see. Another email from Stuart from Glasgow, Scotland. Once again, WWE lets people undeserving get opportunities at title shots. But by the way, Pat, I was waiting for Kurt Angle to troll everybody and say, and number five, Jinder Mahal. But no, he didn't do that. They had five deserving wrestlers in the Fatal Five-Way. But Stuart says, surely Miz and Dean Ambrose are more deserving than the other five. Miz beat Rollins and Balor recently, and Ambrose, being a secondary champion, is technically number two, the main guy on Raw. Also, when are we likely to see Lesnar? Is that going to be three pay-per-views since Mania before we see him? Thanks, guys. What about the philosophy of not putting the Intercontinental Champion and the IC title challenger, the number one contender to the IC Championship? Why not give them an opportunity? It doesn't make storyline sense to do that, to not put them in the top five. I mean, you would think, yes, the IC champ should not be excluded from getting a chance at the number one belt. Does that bother you, Pat?
A little bit, but they sort of explained it last week when they had Dean Ambrose lose to Bray Wyatt. So Bray Wyatt deserves to be ahead of Ambrose in that case. And then you had, Finn Balor beating The Miz. So,
there you go. Yep. And as far as Lesnar goes, he's booked for June 12th in Lafayette, Louisiana, June 26th in Los Angeles, and July 3rd in Phoenix. So you will be seeing Lesnar 1 month from tonight on Raw, and then 2 weeks and 3 weeks later as they lead up to Great Balls of Fire with Lesnar's match. And I'm looking forward to seeing Brock and Paul again. It'll be a dose of some WrestleMania-style star power coming back to Raw after a big drop-off, although it helps to have the superstar shakeup and the return of Finn Balor in the mix to keep things going on Raw. And, I mean, the ratings dip, like you mentioned earlier, Pat. It's not good. It was still one of the top-rated shows, I think number two last week, in viewership.
Yeah.
There's two ways to look at the ratings. WWE focuses on the positive, which is, and as Eric Bischoff said on his podcast last week, there's a lot of TV networks out there who would die for the numbers that Raw is still delivering. My argument is relativity counts. And if you have a diminishing number of people who are interested compared to a sharp decline compared to 1, 2, and 3 years ago of people interested in watching your flagship show on Monday nights, that's a bad thing, no matter how the rest of cable is doing. But it is somewhat mitigated. If the rest of cable was holding steady and Raw went from the number 2 and 3 show of the week to number 12 and 18, this would be a much bigger story. Mm-hmm. But the fact is Raw's ratings are going the way the tide is, which is a downward trend in cable television in general. But still, if you're WWE, it behooves them to be concerned. It behooves them to care. They should be concerned, Pat. And they don't want to have fewer people they're pitching the network to. They don't want to have fewer people they're trying to sell tickets to. And when fewer people watch Raw, that's a bad thing.
In general, yes.
Yeah. Appreciate the email from Stuart in Glasgow. Let's now go to our next caller. We'll go to Kenny in Mobile, Alabama. Kenny, thanks for holding. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. You're our first non-New Jersey caller. How's that feel?
All right. I just want to rant for a second and then get you guys' comments on it. Raw, I found, was a little bit better than it normally is. I was entertained for probably at least an hour and a half of the three-hour show. Not an hour and a half, you know, I was looking at my phone. But one thing that kind of, you know, y'all said earlier that kind of thought Bray Wyatt would win this Fatal 5-Way match. When I first saw it, I kind of thought maybe they would jump the gun and go ahead and do Roman, because out of those five people, I don't believe that any of those guys can beat Lesnar. What do you think they can do to, I guess, build any of those other four people up to make us believe they can actually beat Lesnar? The other thing I had was, you know, I would like matches to mean something more. I know these five guys are fighting each other at Extreme Rules, but instead of just putting them in the Fatal 5-Way, why couldn't we've had, you know, Wyatt fight Heath Slater? Even though we know Wyatt was going to crush him, at least we know, you know, that match gives a little meaning on whoever wins this becomes a number one contender. You know, I just like matches to mean something. I mean, I know they haven't really done that a whole lot. They do it sometimes. I would like to see it more.
Pat, your thoughts?
I think it goes back to we talked about the relative stature of Raw in respect to cable television. They don't want the optics of the Raw rating going down again this week. And they were going to do everything they could to make sure that, you know, the people who were watching stayed tuned in for the third hour. I don't know whether it's going to work or not, and we're going to find out. But I think they're concerned that if they put a Bray Wyatt versus Heath Slater out there match out there, that people are going to tune out.
Well, anything else, Kenny?
Yes, another comment. Like I said before, me and my sister watched the show, and when, you know, Roman comes out, I, you know, just shake my head and nod, and she said, "You're such a typical wrestling fan." And I looked at her and I said, "Well, what does that even?
You said,
what
thank
does
you.
That mean?" And she said,
"Yeah,
I guess it is a compliment, but I mean, I said, what do you mean by that?" And she says, "You boo Roman Reigns, you find plot holes in the stories, and you're just negative." And I was like, I don't feel like I'm negative about everything. I do think they do some things well, but I thought it was just kind of a funny comment she said to me earlier.
Yeah. Cool. Well, yeah.
But you guys have a good night, man. I appreciate you taking my call.
Thanks, Kenny. Hey, I don't think you're doing anybody any favors by being positive when you're being given a product that you are pretty sure is below par. And I don't think you should have to apologize for not being an apologist. Pro wrestling promoters and wrestlers are not infallible. I've watched wrestling long enough to know there's good stretches and there's bad stretches, and there's bad things during good stretches and good things during bad stretches. But just blindly praising everything and saying Vince McMahon is a genius, he knows what he's doing, just wait, it'll all work itself out and you'll see he was right, I know does not turn out that way a significant percentage of the time. And even Vince McMahon would admit that. And Vince McMahon would not actually truly respect you if you just thought he was always right all the time and there was no reason to critique or second-guess some of his decisions, because even he knows and has admitted he doesn't bat 1,000, and sometimes the person to recognize it is the person whose money he wants, because you're the customer, and if you're not satisfied, you have nothing to apologize about, and voicing your displeasure is actually helping WWE steer in a better direction. All right, let's go next to Sam. And Sam, where are you calling from tonight?
I'm calling from Huntington Beach, California.
All right, I've been there once. Beautiful.
I'm so stoked you took my call. Did you get my email?
I did. Yeah, that's why.
Chance? I know
you jumped in line because you insisted.
You're awesome. I actually just flew in, and I just got in my car when I sent that email. So I have to tell you this, and I'm not saying this to gas you up. I just started listening to you a couple months ago, and I want you to, and this is honestly how it happened. I started to listen to kind of some episodes because I didn't really get how the podcast works, you know. I thought you were live, so I started to listen to those. I really love the Thursday interviews and the stories and the guys that you have on there. That was like a month and a half ago. Now I literally call, I listen to you every day, whoever's on there. Like, you guys are great in the sense of, you really do provide, like, if you are a fan of wrestling, like, this is such a really good outlet to just be a part of. So, yeah, I had to give you credit right there. Couple things.
Thank you.
I wanted to Yeah. Anything? Was that too much or no?
Oh, I never tire of that. I mean, I think listeners would tire of it, but I don't. We'll take that every once in a while.
Okay, I mean, I could talk to you about anything. Like, I am a huge wrestling fan, but like I said, like, I'm probably a wrestling fan that, like, you know, other wrestling fans would hate. I'm a fan of the business and, you know, the marketing aspect of it and just kind of this interesting time where WWE is. And you were just talking about it, and I guess this is a rant, and then I'll end it with a question. But I think WWE, they're so, like, they're in such a crucial spot right now where they can really grab TV, you know, kind of by the, you know, the nutsack and do something with it. And, like, they're not doing it. Like, if they were smart, WWE would be creating must-see TV. Like, Monday Night War TV is what they should be doing right now. Numbers are down across the board. And like you said, that Eric Bischoff quote, network would die to get WWE on their TV. But more than that is they need to fulfill their advertisers. And advertisers no longer want to pay these ridiculous amounts of prices for airtime. Like, it's done. And you look at a company like WWE and what they've done with social media, like, they bring all of that wherever they go. That is what I've always felt about the WWE. And the only other company and entity that you can say that about is the NFL. Do you think it's a stretch to say that?
No, I think that's fair. I mean, they didn't. It's still pro wrestling, and they still have their demographic studies and socioeconomic and income level studies and all that, that reduces the ad rates WWE can get compared to, say, the soccer deal that was signed right before WWE. So there's some pros and cons to... There's some good and some bad on each side of the ledger in terms of what WWE brings. But, I mean, it is a 52-week-a-year juggernaut. It is an industry that predates the NFL, that predates pro football as a spectator sport, predates the NBA as a TV property, and on and on. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, pro wrestling, there's something about pro wrestling, and it can be appealing. It can be promoted and presented many ways and appeal to different types of people in different ways. But as a broad genre, there's something about it that appeals to a wide swath of this population. And WWE is far and away the biggest company at this point than any wrestling promotion has ever been. And part of that is they as they say, you know, they said that in the conference call. Was it last week or the week before? I guess 2 weeks now. Oh, no, just last week. I don't know. It's all a blur. It was 2 weeks ago. But anyway, that they do social media because they feel they should. You know, like, it doesn't make revenue for them directly, but it's something you have to do if you're going to be in the business that they're in. And they do it very well.
Right. I agree. And I think, and I just want to say two things, and then I have one more question, and then I'll shut up. I think you made a good point last week when you said WWE has stopped caring about creating superstars, and they're wrapped up in the brand, you know, and you said that, and it's like they see it, and that's the wrong mentality. Like, that is this is the worst time that you can have that mentality, but that's just my thoughts. Okay, one last question, and now it's about women. I don't know if you guys have spoken about this, but have you guys noticed that Nia Jax is the only woman that they announce her weight every single time she comes to the ring? Have you guys noticed that, or has anyone else mentioned that, or have you guys talked about that on the show in the past?
I hadn't noticed that, no, but I believe you're right, though.
Yeah, she's the only one that they announce 275 every time, and it's like, I'm telling you right now, the women's picture for Raw at SummerSlam is going to be Nia Jax and Alexa Bliss, and they're going to let that be Nia Jax's moment. And I'm curious to see, because Alexa Bliss plays the bully. Like, she's the, and you guys talk about it all the time, from a mic standpoint, she's the best thing they have going.
Yeah.
Like, period. And I'm wondering, do they take it there? Do you think if they did a feud between those two, they would allow Alexa to pick on her weight?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, Pat, would they go there?
I don't think they would. I don't think they would go there in those words, but you know, right. Yeah. But I mean, because there, you know, there's got to be a little sensitivity left after after all the you know, after all the JBL bullying thing and the whole Be a Star thing. But they're going to be walking. Yeah, I can see them sort of walking the line on that a little bit. You know,
and
I can. Yeah,
and I'm not against going. I'm not against going there as long as the entire framework around it makes it clear that it's shameful and disgusting. Like, I mean, if you're going to promote heels, you, I mean, hey, there's after, you know, there's the, you know, the after school specials back in the day where there was a bully. There was, you know, Karate Kid 1. There were bad kids doing bad things. That's not pro-bullying, but you have to have them get their comeuppance, and you have to have authority figures stand up for the one getting picked on, and that message, that aspect of WWE storytelling gets lost. You know, the racial undertones of the Triple H Booker T feud, which Triple H won, is one that's often referenced. You can't have somebody picking on someone's race and say, you know, go there, and then not have the baby face who end up looking like the heel was right all along. I mean, it's just, so you have to tell the story well, but I don't think you rule out a lot of sensitive topics just because you do Be a Star. It just has to be framed and presented the right way and have the proper ending.
Right, agreed. And I'm just curious to see, like, I wonder, like, no one has ever talked about that. Like, what is the point of them announcing her weight? You know, like, I just found that curious. But anyways, I appreciate you guys taking my call, and I'm a big fan, man. I love
Thanks,
you guys. Keep doing what you're doing.
Really appreciate
that. Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Thanks for calling. I think it's really tacky when they go to Renee Young and announce her weight when she's doing interviews. I think that's pretty tacky.
Yeah, that's really uncalled for, I think.
It is, yes. All right, we'll go another break and come back for what will likely be our final segment of the program, and we'll take more calls and emails. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. All right, we're back. I'm Wade Keller, joined by Pat McNeil. This is the PW Torch Livecast post-Raw edition on Monday night, May 15th, 2017. I will be hosting with Greg Parks tomorrow after SmackDown, Jason Paul for the Midweek Flagship on Wednesday. And I mentioned it at the top of the show, but just a reminder, we'd love for you to go VIP. Check out details, see if it's for you. Full list of all the benefits that come with a VIP membership and sign-up info can be found at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Let's go next to Jason in Australia. Jason, welcome to the live cast.
Yeah, thanks, Dwight and Pat. Just to go on what the previous caller was talking about with the potential Alexa Bliss, Nia Jax storyline based on her weight.
Oh, yeah.
See, I was going to talk about what the previous caller talked about in relation to Nia Jax. If she's still a little bit dangerous in the ring, see, I thought since Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax are good friends in real life, to me, Nia Jax would be the perfect bodyguard type for Alexa Bliss. If she just plays the bodyguard. You know, Alexa Bliss could talk about that. She's become Raw Women's Champion. She's got endorsements coming her way. Everyone wants a piece of her. She's making a lot of money. And she's paying Nia Jax very good money to keep to watch her back because she now has a target with all these ruthless people after her, like Bayley. You know, put a bit of a spin on it. And then while Nia Jax is playing the bodyguard to Alexa Bliss, she can be, you know, sharpening her skills, say, in NXT if she's considered dangerous. And then you could go to that potential storyline 6 to 8 months down the track where Nia Jax starts to get a little bit better and Alexa Bliss starts to make fun of her weight. So I thought that could be a potential angle they could go to. As far as Goldust, yeah, go on. Yep.
Oh, I just nodding verbally. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. You're talking about Roman Reigns, if he was to turn heel and the crowd would cheer him. When you look at, say, Goldust and Dolph Ziggler, and when they turn heel, they're obviously respected veteran baby faces. And I think that when they turn heel on the initial act, the crowd actually cheer that because they're like, well, finally, a respected babyface that we like has actually got a bit of an edge to them, and we think this is cool for their character, and we're happy it's happening to the person who's playing that character. So I think that's the initial reaction you get. With Roman Reigns, I think, say if they had an instance where, like an action where he turned heel, I think the crowd would initially cheer because they're seeing something cool, but I think in the subsequent shows, they would actually boo him. Because I think if you strategically match him up against an AJ Styles or a Kevin Owens or a Sami Zayn, the fans will get behind. I don't think there'll be any trouble with booing Roman Reigns. But I think the initial action when he does turn heel will actually get, you know, some crowd yes chance or whatever. Because people will be like, wow, this is something cool. We finally want to see it. But the other thing that I want to talk about...
Jason, you hit the nail on the head there in that so much of it is about who they match somebody up with after a turn. Because, you know, if you want to control... if you want fan reaction to be matching up with the roles that wrestlers play, have wrestlers play a role that is natural for them. Some people can play both, and some are better at one or the other. And then when you actually match them up in a feud, make sure they're matched against somebody who is really good at the role that they're playing, and it's the opposite of theirs. Nobody pitches a movie script for Hollywood going, hey, I got this great idea. We've got this protagonist, and everybody's going to love him. And we're going to match him against this other guy who is going to be the antagonist, but he's pretty likable too. Like, you're not going to do that. You're going to set up a movie script for if you have control of it by making sure that the protagonist is the sympathetic figure and the movie the people watching the movie are rooting for him. Granted, there's very sophisticated TV shows where there's bad guys doing bad things, but they're against other bad guys and sometimes even against good guys, and you're kind of rooting for them because they're the main character of the TV show and you're invested in them. Pro wrestling is not, it doesn't have a 13-episode story arc with a huge budget and all kinds of thoughts going into the script and all kinds of nuances for an adult audience. They can't do that. It's pro wrestling. So they've got to be more action movie oriented in that respect. And it is, it's about matching the right people up against each other. Go ahead, Jason.
Oh, it's so important. I mean, like, you know, to me, you know, Roman Reigns, okay, turns heel on someone that no one's expecting. I do think right there and then the crowd will be excited because they're like, oh, finally, they're giving something we want from a storyline point of view. But I think in the subsequent Raws, people would get behind booing him, like you said, if they match him against the right person.
And now, he acts like himself and talks about how he thinks he's better than everybody else, and the only reason you're married to your wife is because I didn't date her first. And I mean, just play off of what fans think about him in real life. And, you know, if he plays off of that, fans aren't going to cheer him. They're going to boo him if he's a heel. But anyway.
Oh, exactly. And they would. And he'd do such a good job at it. So yeah. I don't think there's any concern with that. And, you know, on another point, with Braun Strowman, I was really worried that when they introduced him as a character, the crowd were going to crap all over him because almost in this era, it almost works against you to be a big man because people assume you're lumbering, you don't have any moves or whatever, especially with this very critical audience. But because they've done such a good job with him as a storyteller, you know, telling the right story with him and presenting him in the right way, the fans are ready to buy whatever you give them. So the fans are willing to accept whatever you put to them if it's done in the right way. So this idea that they may have that fans are going to reject this person or whatever, it's so stupid. You control your own destiny. You control the rules. You control the universe. We're willing to buy along. Just tell the right story and we'll buy in because it's like we're equal partners here. Now, with Brock Lesnar, this is the main point I wanted to bring up. So here's what, contract ends, what, after WrestleMania next year? So as far as his actual wrestling in big events, he's probably got, say, 6 or 7. You know, he got Great Balls of Fire, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, maybe one in between. So I guess, you know, just throwing ideas out there, where do you think they're going to go with him to WrestleMania? Well, I see a big selling point, the Demon versus the Beast. You know, I see that as a tagline. Do you do that at SummerSlam with the symbolism being that Finn Balor won the Universal title at SummerSlam last year. He's coming back to get it again. Can he slay the Beast? Do you go with Reigns and Lesnar early? I mean, how many losses do you want Lesnar to get before he goes off into the sunset? Do you want Reigns to have 2 wins against him? So maybe Reigns beats him at Survivor Series, gets him again in a rematch, so Reigns is the dominant person, and then you say go to WrestleMania and maybe Samoa Joe beats Lesnar and he takes the mantle as the new full-time beast. How do, and just throwing it out there for you and Pat, if you were booking this, how do you get the most out of Lesnar and his losses so people can get over? And what's the right story to tell? Because to me, I think that would be very strategic.
Oh, they do, because if you have Brock put everybody over and you're assuming he won't resign, what if he wants to resign? Then you've got a damaged Brock Lesnar who's, you know, going to probably put up a fight if he wants another contract. If he's done or done except for special attraction matches thereafter, you still don't want to destroy him, and you want whatever happens at whenever you put him... Whenever he puts somebody over, you want it to count for something. But if he puts everybody over, it doesn't count for much at all. It gets watered down. So
I'm not saying everyone. I'm saying a strategic two people. I'm saying you want to get it. Reigns, I'm thinking if I'm going to put him over, I want Reigns to Joe. I mean, I know people look at Balor. I don't subscribe to the theory that it's unrealistic for a small guy and a big guy. I think it's pro wrestling. We can let that slide. But I do think Balor can get a lot out of really taking it up to Lesnar and just falling short. But I think you can have Reigns go over him strong and Joe. Those are the two guys I would invest in.
Yeah, and I wasn't disagreeing with you, Jason. I was sort of more just underlining your point that if people think, well, if he's only going to wrestle, you know, 5-6 more matches, he should put over everybody. It's like, well, no, then by the end of the year, it doesn't feel like it meant anything when anybody beat him. Pat, what do you think about Samoa Joe being one of two people along with Reigns, if it were limited to just two? And then on a broader sense, who are the others that you think would benefit the most and prioritize getting a win over Brock?
It would depend on how long the wrestler who beats Lesnar is going to be around after he beats Lesnar. So you want somebody who's got, you know, who's got a few more years left in his career. And I mean, if Samoa Joe's that person, great. I would expect it either to be, you know, I would think that the people who get the most out of it would either be Rollins or Balor, frankly. I mean, but if you had somebody else come up who was, you know, if you had some other young star coming up that you wanted to do that with, or you know, then I could understand that.
Jason, are you going to feel cheated if we don't see AJ and Brock?
Well, it all depends on the story they're going to tell. I mean, like, it's a balancing act. I mean, AJ versus Brock would be a tremendous match. I mean, I don't particularly care about the match. I care about where they're going after the match. So what's in line for AJ afterwards? If you put Nakamura over Brock, what's in line for Nakamura afterwards if he beats him? To me, I want to know is what's their next step. I don't particularly care about the quality of the match. I want to know what their next step is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Pat, how about you? AJ, Brock, do you think they're going to deliver that? Do you think we need to see that?
I think people want to see AJ against any big-name WWE star he hasn't been in with. So... yeah, I mean, I think people would want to see AJ and Brock. I don't know that it's in the plans for any time this next year, and I would think you would need to keep Lesnar around after this year if you want to put that together.
All right, very good. Jason, anything else for us?
No, that's about it. I just think it's very interesting. I'd really like to be a fly on the wall and see what they're talking about Brock, what their plans are, which events he's going to wrestle in, because, you know, to me, I think they've got to have their eye on what's coming up after WrestleMania 34. So I'm just interested to see, because, you know, they're throwing out Bray Wyatt, they're throwing out Seth Rollins, they're throwing out Balor, they're throwing out all these names. Which one's going to stick?
It's a great topic, Jason. Appreciate you bringing it up. We'll talk to you next time. You bet. All right. Let's, we got enough people here. Why don't we do one more segment? We'll throw to one more break and come back for a closing segment.
90 seconds.
With some more calls. So if you're on hold, hold tight, and we'll get to you right after this.
Do you love Pro Wrestling Torch? Then we've got another show just for you, Ring Rust Radio.
Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest topics and news from around the wrestling world, including WWE Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-views, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan, and indie wrestling. Add in interviews with the biggest names in the industry like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Paul Heyman, Kurt Angle, and many more. And Ring Rust Radio has something for everyone.
Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Interact with us on Twitter at Ring Rust Radio and email us at ringrustradio@yahoo.com.
All All right, we're back. We're taking your calls, and let's go next to, I believe, Jonathan. Jonathan, where are you calling from today? Air code 908. I might have your name wrong.
Hello?
Yeah, hey. Yeah, who's this?
This is Jimmy, actually.
Oh, Jimmy. Sorry about that. Yeah, where are you calling from tonight?
It's okay. I'm actually calling from Clark, New Jersey, but I attended the show tonight in Newark.
Okay.
10 seconds.
We had a couple people call who were in the building. I don't know if you heard them, but if you did, what do you have to add?
No, I was actually, our train was a little bit late, so I'm catching a bit late. I do apologize if I give any extra information.
No, go ahead.
Just real quick side note, I never thought I'd actually get through it. I've been listening for like years, so this is a pretty amazing moment for me right now, although many may seem that sounds dumb, but regardless, so the last Monday Night Raw I've been to was actually before WrestleMania 31, so it's just really interesting seeing how things evolve and change. A couple of points of note, I personally, and I don't know how you guys feel, I found the placement of the matches a bit interesting tonight when they set up some of the major matches after the announcement of the Fatal 5-Way. For example, Bray Wyatt and Roman and Wyatt and Rollins. I was expecting, and I don't know about you, Balor and Roman to main event, especially because of the special they're doing on Balor, which I haven't gotten a chance to see yet. So when that match went on, when it did, I noticed a lot of people in my section were actually kind of surprised, especially since the last time that match did happen, that main event did, and Balor went on to win. So when that match happened, a lot of people left the arena. I don't know if anyone has said that yet.
No.
But there was a good amount of people who left that arena, a lot of family, a lot of kids. I would say at least 10 to 15%, which is, I mean, I believe that arena holds close to 13,000 people. So when that match went on, people left.
I suspect,
and when Wyatt and...
I suspect, Jimmy, I'll jump in real quick. I suspect that the fans leaving, the families leaving, is probably why they put the match on when they did. They want the kids who have school the next day in the building to see it and at home to have a chance to see it before it gets too late. They also might not have wanted to go to the Balor special right after losing. And I'll add a third element. We talked about this earlier in the show. I think they wanted to put Bray over strong because maybe Bray is the favorite to end up winning the Fatal 5-Way because he can be fodder for Lesnar. You can kind of get away with him being a substitute opponent with Braun out of the picture. So you work your way to that, and so you end up with the guy who you're headlining as a challenger, you end up with him having the hot angle at the very end of the show. That's kind of the peak moment.
That's a really good point, because when Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt went on, those are my two guys right now in WWE, Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt. So I felt like the creative team knew that I was coming to this Raw, and that's why they put that match on. Because I think they said it in the arena, but I'm pretty sure it was the first time they've ever faced each other one-on-one, because even when the Shield and the Wyatt family were battling, I don't think they've ever gotten a chance to wrestle in a singles match. So I was happy as a fan that they got the main event, but I also noticed people, because that was, Bray works a little methodical of a match, and I noticed the people were then again leaving. I don't know if because they were bored. I enjoyed the match because I understand Bray's psychology and the way Seth Rollins worked, but I agree with your point of why they did put on Roman, and I think it was a smart choice. So I wanted to point on that. And just the other thing I wanted to point on, I know you're running probably later, whatever the case may be, but Braun Strowman's injury, I could have sworn Ryan Satin, who is a fairly credible, he's one of the only people on the dirt sheets that I actually kind of take seriously. Besides, you're not a part of the dirt sheet, but everything you say I take seriously as well. But I heard that Braun Strowman, I thought, and maybe I'm wrong, but I thought it was 2 to 4 months. When they said 6 months, was that a surprise to you, or did I just get wrong information?
No, I think what they're doing is they're setting up Braun to be the monster who cut the estimated time to be gone in half. I mean, that's just pretty standard practice in pro wrestling. If someone's going to be out 2 to 4 months and you say they're going to be out 2 to 4 months and they are out 5 months, the macho psychology is, oh, what a wimp. He must not have worked hard at rehab like Seth Rollins did or John Cena did. So, yeah, I haven't heard that the injury is worse once they got in there, and it's possible it is, and they're leaning more to 4 to 5 months. Either way, you're going to hear an exaggerated length.
Yeah, okay. I went with my sister and my boyfriend, and when I heard that, that's exactly my thought, that they're going to have him come back in superhuman time. And then the only thing that made me ask that question right now is because I went on Bleacher Report, but that's where I like how they compile a lot of the different dirt sheets, and they have their own articles. And there was a Bleacher Report article reporting that as if it was real. So I guess maybe they, because I agree with you. I think that they are they want Braun to come back sooner, and it's going to be because, I mean, it's a little ridiculous that Braun Strowman got his, you know, I'm assuming they're playing off the injury to be the point when the ambulance, I didn't hear the commentary tonight, but I don't know if they're trying to say that when Braun got hit with the ambulance door, that's when that injury happened. Is that how they're painting it, when the injury actually happened? Or they haven't really talked about when?
Well, they had a couple video packages on it. Pat, do you want to chime in on this a little bit and what Jimmy's saying about the selling of the injury and then the framing of how long he'll be out?
They were playing it on the video package like as if last week was Roman re-injuring Braun's arm and making it worse, and therefore, you know, the rehab time is going to be longer.
Okay, I got it. Okay. Yeah, no, I just asked that because, I mean, we all hate, you know, Roman because of his superhuman nature, and the guy's gotten, you know, thrown off of a large surface on a gurney, and he's gotten, you know, destroyed, and it would be a little ridiculous if, you know, the little bit that Roman has done to Strowman has kept him out. But I guess it all makes sense within the context of the narrative arc they're trying to talk about. But that's all I had. I really appreciate you answering my call. This has been like years in the making, so I apologize if I talk too fast.
No,
or I was a little nervous.
No, you're great. Don't be nervous. I got a question for you. We asked our previous callers go to all the shows in Newark. You hadn't been there for a number of years. What you said, you kind of were observing what was different about the product. Did anything jump out to you that felt different about the crowd, the vibe, the show, considering it's been a while since you've been there?
Definitely. Well, when I went, Roman and Brock were the main event that year. I went to the Raw when, I don't know if you recall the segment when Bray Wyatt and Undertaker were feuding, and Bray Wyatt did that promo with the casket, and he lit the casket on fire. I don't know if you recall that promo that he did.
Yep.
So that was the one that I went to, and Jon Stewart was there, and it was just, I don't know, I noticed that this time around, I think that it's just the social media age that we're in, hearing so many people talk about, oh, well, this can't happen because that's going to happen, and oh, you know, they're going to do this. I just think that the industry is just so, I don't want to say that people aren't enjoying the product when they're watching it, but I just heard a lot of conversation regarding, you know, critiquing the product, whereas the last time that I went, I just felt, I don't want to say that I felt stressed when I was there from all the people talking about, you know, the logistics of the product, but I just, you know, and also keep in mind that I wasn't there, you know, the cruiserweights, I don't know if anyone talked about how somebody got thrown out with the beach ball segment.
Yeah.
Not the beach ball segment. Okay. So, you know, it's just, I mean, that always happened. The CM Punk chants always happened, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I want to say I feel bad, because I think part of it falls on WWE's shoulders for not maybe presenting the cruiserweight division as a whole a little better. But that's also something that jumped out to me, aside from just the general, you know, people thinking that they write the show and they can write the show better. But, you know, it's just a shame that, you know, I think a large portion of the audience go to these wrestling shows kind of to put themselves over more than to enjoy the product. And I kind of found that tonight, because I go to a lot of shows for years, but I go to a lot of the house shows at Madison Square Garden. So this is the first televised event as I just said.
Yeah.
So, and seeing that environment is also different. I feel that there's more of an appreciation for the wrestling. And I mean, that's of course to be expected, that house shows, you're generally given more time and whatnot. But I guess to answer your question, just how the fans have evolved in their thinking, and how, and you know, I'll always have a good time going to see wrestling shows, but you know, there's a guy next to me, you know, he was a big Roman Reigns fan, and he spent a majority of the show, you know, trying to fight with the other people around him. Not physically, you know, he had a son there, but it's just like this, like, battle between the fans who know, you know, I run a little podcast with my friends, so we kind of do, you know, we know stuff in the industry, and we talk about it differently than someone like that. So I guess things like that are different when you're there in a live setting.
Cool. Jimmy, thanks for calling. Glad you finally called. Call again.
Yes, thank you so much, Wade. Good night.
You bet. Good night. All right, three people on site in New Jersey. Pat, anything you want to add to that?
I think everybody in Manchester, New Hampshire tomorrow's got their work cut out for them. So get there early, call in early. Just be ready, okay?
Sounds good. All right, we're going to wrap up on that note. I didn't get to everybody. I'm sorry. We stayed overtime. and still didn't get to some regulars and some newer callers. So my apologies for that. Just give us a try tomorrow. Email your question in. Maybe we'll cover it on the midweek flagship. Pat McNeil, always a pleasure. Thank you for joining me today.
No problem. Everybody call in Sunday night after Backlash. We'll talk.
Excellent. Yes, Greg Parks, Pat McNeil after Backlash on Sunday night right here at PWTorchLiveCast.com. Until tomorrow, you've got a chance to sign up as a VIP member, and we will now give you information on how you can go VIP. Here's an extended look at what comes with the membership. If you're a fan of the PW Torch Livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch Livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com. And that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. All right, that'll do it for me for today. Thanks, everybody, for joining us on today's program. Be sure to check out an editorial at pwtorch.com right now on Randy Orton and what he had to say to those indie-style wrestlers and all their dives. Got an editorial on that, how Randy Orton's Twitter rant might have unwittingly made him part of the problem. And also verifies why he's such a convincing prick on television. That's the headline from our editorial from a PW Torch contributor, Kelly Wells. Also, you can catch up on what you might have missed on this Twitter controversy this weekend and earlier today. A lot of people getting involved in this discussion, including CM Punk, Batista, EC3, Ricochet. Got an article with highlights of the different Twitter comments in the news section at pwtorch.com. Plus results of Copenhagen, Denmark from last night, the final night for the SmackDown Tour. And Sean Radican's ROH War of the Worlds pay-per-view report with the farewell for Adam Cole on ROH pay-per-view. And much more. So go check it out. All kinds of good stuff over at pwtorch.com. And until tomorrow, with Greg Parks joining me as co-host, this is Wade Keller thanking you and signing off.